Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me, as ever, is Oriol Puigdemont to discuss the Aragon Grand Prix. And Yuri, it was a good race.
Yeah, it was an amazing race. We've seen a lot of interesting things. We've seen the regular version of Marc. We've seen an outstanding Pecco presenting to the world as a top rider. I mean, I didn't have any doubt about that, but I think he really needed this kind of a statement. It was a really exciting race.
Yeah, it was unusual to have a weekend that was fairly quiet in terms of news, you know, no big bombshells. So it was quite nice to actually just focus on the racing. We'll start with Pecco because, you know, he's the eighth different winner in 2021, which is an amazing stat on its own. But it seems very long overdue because there was a couple of opportunities that Pecco's had and the luck's not gone his way. But everything just seemed perfect to Aragon. He rolled the bike out the truck and he said he didn't touch it from Silverstone. It was perfect. Rossi said this was Pecco's weekend and not even Marc Marquez, the great Marc Marquez, could stop that.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, Pecco did, I mean, the perfect race. And hopefully it will give him a boost just to believe even more on himself. I'm not saying that he was not doing that. He was not believing on himself, but it just, everybody needs this kind of boost to get this extra of self-confidence. And maybe from now on, we will see another kind of rider. After the race, I just went to congratulate the Ducati guys, and I had a really small chat with Tardozzi. I congratulate him because on Friday I was I was walking through the paddock and then he came and we were talking and then he told me, don't forget Pecco. This weekend he will be fast as hell. And after the race, I congratulate him. I said, listen, you told me, yeah, you were right. And then he told me, okay, now wait in Misano. Because in Misano, he will be even faster than here. So, yeah, I can't wait to see this, let's say, more confident version of Pecco.
Yeah, it's a good point because obviously Pecco was so strong in Misano last year on the Pramac bike. And he wasn't strong at all at Aragon last year. None of the Ducatis were out. It was a really bad track for them. Okay, the conditions were a big factor last year, but I mean, Pecco could barely stay on the bike in Aragon last year. And he came to the circuit thinking, I don't really know how to be fast. So yeah, it's a great turnaround. And he just looked a different rider after that race. He just looked free, I think is maybe the best way to describe it.
Yeah, and I would say, yeah, I agree, 100% agree with you. But not only free, in my opinion, he looks solid in terms of that he was not showing any doubt in any of the maneuvers with Marc. He was convinced about what to do in every single maneuver. So he was defending himself really, really good. And he didn't make any mistake despite having Marc on his, you know, back end. So it was the perfect job. I mean, in my opinion, chapeau. Because we did the Spanish podcast straight after the race and we got Artur Vilalta, which is the communications director. And he told us that, and we agreed that in a way we've seen a kind of the best version of Dobby yesterday, because they were riding style apart and this, you know, but the way he defend himself against Marc Márquez was quite similar.
It's interesting you say that, because that's exactly what Mark said. He said, like, I've had many fights with Dovi, and this was like Dovi, but with more corner speed, which I thought was telling, because that was the big thing about Pecco last year.
Yeah, and not only that, it comes from Moto2.
Yeah, that was the big thing about Pecco. On these tyres, the Ducati struggled a lot last year, the softer construction, but the way Pecco cornered sort of was a workaround to that. And, you know, we saw, obviously, the bike's taking a step forward, but it just kind of shows, again, Ducati's kind of vision for its future in terms of what it wanted to do. Obviously, salaries came into, were a factor to consider, but
I think it all came together.
Yeah, exactly. We know Miller's speed and we know Pecco's speed, and maybe there was some doubts after the first few rounds about the factory lineup, given what we saw from Zarco and Martin. But I don't think there can be any doubts now that they went the right way.
Not only that, coming back to Pecco, without having anything against Jack, I think he's a really, really, really fast rider. And not only that, but also a really good guy. I don't know why, but I see on Pecco, I feel in Pecco this kind of, let's say, leadership that Jack is probably still missing, in my opinion. I can be wrong, but don't forget, I mean, that the two the races that Jack has won this year, in Jerez it was because Fabio had problems with the arm pump, because otherwise was easy win for Fabio. Yeah. And in we all know how fast Jack is on wet conditions in Le Mans. Don't get me wrong, I mean, full credit to him.
yeah.
But
sure.
I would love to see Jack winning a race like Pecco, not only against Mark, against anybody.
I totally get what you mean. Yeah, it's we've seen riders go up against Marc Márquez before, and it's not an easy thing. You know, Dovi was good at it, but you know, Fabio in 2019 didn't beat Marc. You know,
I think that this year would be a completely different story.
I think so as well, but you know, not every people that have gone up against Marc in head-to-head fights have not always come off the best, because we know how much of a demon Marc is. And yes, maybe he's not at full fitness, but what we saw in Aragon, like you said, was like the regular Marc.
And, yeah.
And it was all race. It wasn't as if it was like the last few laps. It was all race that Pecco had that pressure, and he did not crack.
And don't forget that after the race, straight after the race, Marc's comments, he was a bit of angry after the race when he said, yeah, many people have been talking about I'm not coming back. I'm not going to be the same rider as before the injury, blah, 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 blah. So that's to them. So it implies that he feels at least in Aragon, he felt really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the same than before, the same rider as he was before the injury, but it implies that he was feeling really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So full credit to him, full credit to Pecco. And I would say that Pecco has won the closest version to the best version of Marc Márquez.
Yeah. I think that's a fair enough way to put it. I mean, Marc did admit there was still a little bit of limitation in that race. If you look at all his overtaking maneuvers, they came on left-hand corners because he said he just didn't feel strong enough on the right. What I thought was quite interesting was that he was quite open about the fact that after the crashes in practice, he was like, I was a little bit nervous because I didn't want to make a mistake, because I know these opportunities might not come again this season. So we're definitely seeing a kind of a much more, I don't know what the... fragile mark, maybe. He's a bit more wary of opportunities slipping by him, which is fair enough.
The way I see it is he is one step closer to the full, let's say, full recovery. Because, I mean, he needs to do these kind of steps. Okay, yesterday he didn't win, but he was fighting at, I don't like to put any percentage, but let's say 90%, 95%, which is really close to the, at least from what we watch on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think after last Sunday's race, he is one big step closer to his full recovery. Now, we need to see what's going on Misano in a right-handed track. And he's been really fast there. But of course, I mean, he needs to, let's say, reinforce his performance on this right-handed tracks.
Yeah, for sure. Just looking further down into the championship battle, of course, it wasn't a great day for Fabio Quartararo. It was a strange day for Fabio because he came into the race kind of not 100% convinced of a podium battle, but then after warm-up, he felt like he could do that. And then from the off, he just went backwards. And it seems to be another issue with a rear tire, which, you know, you can, we need to get a chalkboard and just tally up because he's got to have been, it must be almost every rider on the grid now has had some sort of issue.
In my opinion, it's a really shame. It's really shame that this championship can be decided by these kind of things. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not saying that the champion, whoever will be Fabio, doesn't deserve. But it shouldn't be an input or this title fight. I mean, this is MotoGP. This is simply not the way the championship has to be decided.
Yeah, I mean, we're not blaming Michelin as such because the riders refuse to. So, like you say, if the riders won't, then we're not going to touch it. But Joan Mir said the same thing. He said, look, these problems can't happen because they cannot affect a championship. At the end of the day, Michelin does have a responsibility to provide tyres that are solid because they are the controlled tyre supplier. There's not... You know, it's not like they have to focus on one, two brands. It's everyone.
Yeah, it is crazy because if you speak to the riders, and not only to the riders, even to the team managers, they avoid to, let's say, to be to attack or to be really clear about that. So again, that's my position. If they don't do it, okay, I'm not going to do it because in the end, they have to defend themselves. They are the most, the worst part of that. So they are taking the worst. So if they don't want to discuss or be a bit, let's say, direct or clear or aggressive, I'm not going to be that.
Yeah, it's fair enough. And I think we mentioned this in the last podcast and that, you know, the riders kind of do need to, I think, say something, because at the end of the day, how long before it becomes a safety issue?
Yeah,
which is the key thing, you know.
Not only that, I don't think that Michelin will have any safety issue with that tire. It's not a problem of in my opinion, considering the past. I don't see that as becoming a safety issue, but it's just not fair. The championship to be, I mean, the tires to be that important. Yes, important, yes, but because of your choices, because of your behaviors, but not because of the tire is completely different. I mean, the same spec of tire is completely different, works completely in a completely different way than other one that on paper should be the same. Mm-hmm. So that's not acceptable, because then you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know how to touch, how to modify, because then all the data is rubbish.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a tricky situation the riders are in, because it's not as if they can put like a lap on every tire, because then you have the issue of a tire becomes preheated and then it doesn't work at all. So it's It's a kind of a double-edged sword, really, in that...
We all know. Yeah, because Michelin says that it's because of the pandemic, because they need the, they had to save a lot of tires. They don't, you know, because not only for the MotoGP, but, I mean, talking about MotoGP, the pandemic has had a huge impact on the logistics of the calendar, of the championship. So we have to be, we have to do an effort to understand the limitations of this moment. But in my opinion, if that's the case, it will be much easier to speak about it and say, listen, this year we're going to have these limitations. But the problem is that they don't want to admit that limitation.
Yeah.
So...
Well, yeah, it's just the problem. But anyway, back to Fabio. You know, to be fair to him, yes, eighth, not a brilliant result, but it was a fighting eighth, I think is the best way to put it. So he did what he said he would do, that he would fight, you know, for every position possible. He wouldn't just sort of, you know, let a bad race become a bad race. So from that perspective, it was very much another sort of Fabio kind of performance.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the end, it was not a disaster for him. But let's see what happens in Misano. I think will be a completely different story. The Yamaha, I think, will perform well there. But he needs to stop Pecco of getting closer and closer. Let's see. Because I think next two races, or I would say, especially next race, will be crucial for the title fight.
Yeah, I think you might be right there, because, you know, we go to Austin and it's never been a great circuit for Yamaha. So, you know, we're in that point that Joan Mir talked about a few weekends ago of, you know, these next kind of run of races will be super important for the championship for Fabio. And, yeah, you know, Silverstone was good. Aragon's not been so good, but Misano should be good. I mean, the fact that Aragon wasn't good wasn't really a bike issue or a rider issue. So that's, I suppose that's a good thing, in that Fabio came here and was still competitive.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, we still have a small margin to get a title fight, but we are running out of time.
Yeah. I mean, it would be nice if the championship did go down to the wire, but it's hard to see Fabio it's hard to see this result affecting Fabio too much.
At this moment, I only see Pecco with a bit of options, with a really small amount of options of fighting him. Joan, in my opinion, is completely out of the question.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to mention Joan Mir. I mean, third was a good result if you consider the fact, I think his race time was like 6 seconds quicker than last year on a bike that hasn't really developed since last year. So,
well, yeah, but it's not enough. I mean, it's not enough. I mean, you always fight against the others. You always compete against the others. And if the others have improved more than you, you are, man. And again, and don't get me wrong on that, but we have to say again, at least this is my opinion, that last year was completely unusual championship. So I think that he is pushing Suzuki really hard, and he has to. But at the same time, we have to keep in mind which kind of championship Joan won last year. And again, full credit to him. He was the best. End of the story.
Absolutely.
Full stop. But this year is completely another story.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Twan is doing everything he can. And, you know, he said multiple times, he said, you know, we need more. But, I mean, nothing's really going to come from Suzuki come in these final races, really. It seems they will put full focus on 2022 now. But the jump they have to make next year is huge, because they're in a way they're a season behind, because the bike hasn't developed the same amount as the Yamahas, Ducatis, as even the Aprilia.
Yeah, but at the same time, it was more risky for Suzuki than for the others, because I mean, last year's Yamaha was, let's say, very difficult not to beat with the new one. Being polite.
Yeah.
Just not saying that it was a really bad bike.
Yeah.
But Suzuki was not at the same position. Mm-hmm. They had a really balanced bike. They have won a bit of a top speed. And in the end, Joan got the title. So I think Suzuki was in a, let's say, easy position or comfortable position to not being so aggressive on the development of the bike.
I think what we are seeing is really how held back they are by not having a satellite team, because they've had to take the ride height device off the bike again, because it just doesn't work. It's too aggressive when it lowers and it affects the front end too much. Whereas if we look at Ducati, for example, they had already tested it on the Pramac bikes. So when they put it to the factory bikes, it was solid. So,
well, but in a way, I think that this experience can give them a more clear idea about where to go and how to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
They will need to do more tests. They will probably, not now, but at some point, they will have to rethink about the satellite team and considering and analyze the benefits from mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, well, of course, this isn't a new problem really for Suzuki. It's been, I was on a podcast with Chris Vermeulen a few weeks ago, and he said, he always felt at Suzuki when he was there that the biggest problem was they didn't have a satellite team. So, but you kind of feel that it's more important than ever now, because I get the impression that Juan's he's committed, but he's also hiding frustration. He's doing a really good job of hiding frustration. And I think at some point, someone will offer Juan a contract, for 2023, and he will, Suzuki will have to do a big job to keep him.
Yeah, probably. But even for him, it's not easy because, maybe, I don't know, I'm just talking, but I'm just guessing, but maybe Honda can be, because they were in the past. Alberto Puig was interested in him in the past. Could be an option, but signing for Honda now, I don't know.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah,
so it's not that there are no really plenty of places better than Suzuki at this time, because in a way that they don't do crazy things. Not having the satellite team means that the politics are less. Mm-hmm. So if you see Ducati, there's always politics involved. Honda, always politics involved. Now Suzuki, never. We don't speak about politics. Mm-hmm. So because they are just a race team trying to get the most from the bike and the riders. So yeah, I mean, but I agree with you that Suzuki needs to make a step.
Yeah. Two riders I want to just finish off on, the first being Enea Bastianini. That was a great ride from the beast, sixth place on a two-year-old Ducati. We talked about Pecco having a bike that can turn. Bastianini's on a bike that very much doesn't turn as well, and he made it really, really work. And I mean, there's been a lot of focus on Jorge Martin this year and the rookies, but I've been really impressed with Enea and just the way he's gone about his work this year.
Yeah, because he has a really old bike. Yeah, he has an old bike, and it's not easy to perform that well in a track where he's never been before in a MotoGP bike. So it was pretty impressive what he did. He was pretty solid all the weekend.
And he
put everything on the race. So I'm really, really, really glad for him, because he's a good guy and he's a really, really, really good rider. I mean, he's the current Moto2 world champion. So full credit to him.
And it's not much of a surprise, because we saw in Moto2, he was quite quick at adapting to the big bike, especially when you compare it to Luca Marini, and we're seeing the exact same thing again. But yeah, I'm interested to see how he goes at Misano, where Ducati, of course, has a lot of data that he can look at. So, and finally, of course, Maverick Viñales is a Aprilia debut. I mean, it's hard to kind of judge it on results alone because we knew it wasn't going to be a great weekend from a results point of view, but there was a lot of kind of promising comments he made after the race about how the how he felt with the grip on the bike on Moto2 rubber, how he felt just in general in the team. So it seems like Maverick's kind of, he's found the situation that he was wanting. He just needs to get, he just needs to get used to the bike.
Yes, but and that's my personal feeling. I think that he had a bit of a shock.
Yeah, for sure. Well, he said that he's no longer in his comfort zone. Which is interesting.
I think it's a long way ahead of him because, I mean, most of the riders expected him to be closer to the top. So don't forget, I know that it's impossible to compare, okay? But you remember what he did in his first test with Yamaha?
Yeah, yeah.
Boom, he was there. So I know that it's a completely different story, that, yeah, but yeah. That's what I mean when I say that, in a way, I think it was a bit of a shock for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to give Maverick some kind of benefit of the doubt.
Talking about this first impression.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I personally think it was unfair to sort of expect. A lot of journalists thought the same thing after he did the Misano test. Like, oh, I think he'd come to Aragon and after Lelech did the podium. But I thought that was really unfair because Maverick for the past 7 years has rode an inline four bike, which requires a certain style. And a V4 bike requires a completely different cornering style. And that's something he's struggling to find. He even felt the bike was more physical because you have to push harder into the corners. But I think Misano will be interesting because it's a track he knows already on the bike. And I think he will have, I think we'll see a truer reflection of, yeah, of Maverick.
Well, it will be a bit closer, yeah, to the reality. And then he will be also closer to the bike.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the fact he's got these six races, it means that he can focus in the winter on, you know, he doesn't have to go into the winter and test the bike and be new to it.
No, so that's for sure. They are shortening the time window.
So I think next year is the time to kind of look at Maverick, but I think it also puts a bit more pressure on him because he's had this grace period of, you know, he knows the bike going into next year, so he will need to perform from first race next year.
Yeah, I think what it will do will be a huge boost to Aleix. We've seen that. We've seen that even in Aragon. Was before getting that podium on Silverstone, Aragon was one of his favorite tracks. Mm. And he also did perform really well.
Yeah, for sure, fourth. I mean, he was close to a podium before the tires fell away, so... I think we've kind of confirmed that Aragon at the pace of the Aprilia we saw at Silverstone was genuine. So that's good, and good news for Maverick. We'll be back next week. I think we'll end it there, Newry, because we've got another race this weekend and a test. So that's obviously great. We don't like days off here, do we? Well, thank you very much for your company, as always, Newry. And we'll be back next week, like I say, catch up with all the stuff from Aragon on Autosport, motorsport.com, and all of our podcasts on your various podcast channels. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye and keep looking after yourselves.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.